Pickaxe.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey all, I'm Dr. Alok Kanoja, but the internet knows me as Dr. K. I spent 7 years studying to become a monk and then became a psychiatrist. I want to tell you a little bit about my podcast, Healthy Gamer GG, where we combine my clinical experience of practicing psychiatry and sprinkle in years of experience as a meditation teacher and sort of focus on spirituality. So on the podcast, we're going to approach very common everyday problems from each of these lenses. And what we really do well is blend science and spirituality to create the most accessible solutions for people for their everyday problems. So check us out at Healthy Gamer GG on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Trolley Problem Inc. podcast, the podcast based on the game, which is based on the philosophical problem, which asks you to make choices from two awful answers. I'm Simon Byron, and with me is developer Samuel Reed Graves. Hello, Sam.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. I've just eaten an unethical amount of pasta, but... But we should be good.
What would be the ethical amount?
I don't know. Something what fits in a bowl would probably be about
bigger
right.
than a bowl.
Yeah. Well, yeah, pretty much.
Well, I'm feeling a lot better than when we last recorded. You'll be pleased to know. I've not. Sorry. I'm not sure what that episode was like, really, but I was not in a good way. I hope Jan didn't mind. So, we are taking a look at the game and the questions that it poses, and we're inviting a number of guests onto the show. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Lewis Brindley, co-founder of the Yogscast. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Sam. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Excited to have you on the show.
The life is a series of trolley problems, Simon. Like, even eating... Right, like you've got to think, because we're constantly told, oh, you know, a beef steak costs this much water, and you know, this many tons of carbon dioxide released, and a bowl of pasta is probably, you know, especially if it's like whole grain, probably like there's everything is a problem, right? Especially if like it's like animals are tied to one track and plants are tied to the other. You know, this is the choice. I'm always choosing the animal track.
Okay, quite right.
I mean, the veggie track. Sorry, I'm saving the animals.
If games should be a form of escapism, then it feels like we're not. We're out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, I always eat meat in games.
Do you?
that's how you got to get your life back. Yeah. If Streets of Rage taught me anything, you should find a big bit of meat on a stick, and that's how you get your life back.
Yeah, I try and just indulge my fantasies that I can't indulge in real life.
So I'm a vegetarian. I'm under the impression from what you've just said that you are as well. Or
yes, I'm more militant though. I'm a vegan when I can, and I try not to be a bitch about it when they don't have stuff available. But I just found out that Bristol, where we live, is actually the most vegan friendly city in the world. So I have noticed it when I went to Newcastle and couldn't find anything that didn't have, you know, beef or bacon in it. But Bristol, it's very easy to be a vegan, actually. So
when I went to New York probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I thought, being, you know, this massive capital city, there'd be loads of places to eat for vegetarian. And I couldn't find anywhere, to the point that we saw an Applebee's. And I just thought, oh, that's a chain. They're going to have something, even if it's like salad
apples.
And chips. Well, they don't have just apples. So even their salads, and this isn't a
just
joke.
Full of bees. Fuck.
even their salads had meat.
Very stupid already. Sorry.
But yeah. No.
Ruined your anecdote about...
No, oh, no. It was ruined long before I started.
It's just not very good anecdote. Whether bees are vegan or not. So, I genuinely feel like we're constantly confronted today with trolley problem-esque decisions, right? Like just ethical dilemmas that we are... that are not as important, not life or death necessarily, but there's certainly choices, especially in, you know, sustainability. Do you buy the more expensive shampoo because it's got the green logo on it, you know, or do you buy that Tony's Chocolonely instead of the slave made Nestle shit, you know, which do you go for?
I was talking to my wife earlier. She needs a new laptop. And there's a particular make she won't buy because they're still doing business in Russia.
Wow.
It's a good laptop as well. She's missing out.
She's a woke lady. You know, you married a good one.
I was going to ask, given the number or the types of games that you tend to play online throughout the week, do you think that we can, games such as TTT and GTA 5 or what have you, do you think we can learn any lessons about the human race from people's decisions within those games?
Oh God! I was thinking about this morning actually, because these games are if you take them seriously, and you can, you know, you try hard, they actually become less fun quite quickly, and I think that's something that you honestly always have to wrestle against when you're playing any game, because there's this. Especially in online games, they give you a ranking system. You're always told you're in a league. You're almost encouraged constantly to be trying your absolute utmost hardest when you play these games. And I was always one of these people who, when I went to a Magic the Gathering tournament or whatever, I tried to bring something that was fun or silly. I'm not that guy wearing a top hat, bringing a 600 card deck that he has to wheel along in a little wheelbarrow. You know, I'm not. That guy, there's that guy, is there, and he's on the far end of that eccentric spectrum. But he's having a lot of fun, and he's making people cringe around him, but also, to some extent, laugh, too. But there's a middle ground, I think, and I think that we try and take the fun option rather than the try-hard fork.
I was wondering... Yeah. If, and we will come onto the trolley problem in a second, but if...
I'm trying to bring it back round as much as I can. Been, I'm trying to segue back into the trolley problem every single time.
You're on brand, Lewis.
I'm a professional.
Exactly. I was wondering if, you know, if it was the real life, and if you were tied, if you were the individual on the track, okay, and there were five others... and there was a member of the Yogg's cast who had to make the decision. Who would you hope it would be? who would you want to walk on? Who's most likely to walk on by?
Right. Well, I think that there's definitely certain members of the Yogg's cast do fit into archetypes. There's the jester. That's the kind of Pedgwin, you know, the agent of chaos. He's like a coin flip. On his decisions, you know, he would rather allow the mysterious gods of chance to decide the outcome than make it himself, I think, or deliberately, or maybe he's chaotic evil in the sense that there's this alignment chart, you know, of people, of Yogg's members, where he's in that bottom right, and then lawful good would be Ben, who would try and make a kind of rational decision within the bounds. No, I think I need someone neutral, really, because I think lawful good people, you know, who sometimes they won't take into account all the right stuff either. You know, you can't be a robot about this and just follow the orders of society blindly. You know, you gotta make your own moral decisions. And so I need someone who's truly neutral.
Okay. Well, we will come on to it. We will find out a little bit more about you in a second. But before we get there, I just wanted to get a baseline of types of decisions.
Is this calibrating?
Yeah. So have you had anything that's been particularly difficult recently that you've had to...
I had COVID.
Right.
That was crap.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that the consensus that COVID's pretty crap? Has everyone agreed?
It hasn't been
fun,
is that
a controversial decision?
I still haven't had the pleasure yet, so I'll let you know once it's come around.
Delicious. No, it's I had like a really phlegmy throat, like a really really phlegmy, like, and I had to sleep sat up because every time I fell asleep, sort of, it would irritate my throat, you see, and make me cough. I guess that's how it spread. You know, that's the whole point of it, I guess, to try and see how it works. But it was just awful, Simon. I hated it. So yeah, that sucked. What else do you want me to say? I watched a movie at a cinema. That was rubbish.
Did you? There were which loads one of people was it?
Talking a Batman, but everyone's forgotten how to. Batman was okay, but everyone's forgotten how to behave in a cinema. They've all had 3 years of staying at home, being able to pause it and go on their phones if it's boring.
So did you say anything? I mean, that's a choice you have to make.
I didn't.
No, I don't either. British. I don't. Yeah. Absolutely. Whereas talking about my wife again, she absolutely will lean over and tell somebody not to. And I'm like, we're going to get stabs.
Yeah. Then it does depend on my mood. Sometimes if I'm in a bad mood, I will confront people or call them out or call them a name sometimes. But that is... Yeah, I have to be ready to hot on my heels to run from the potential stabbing, as you mentioned.
So I love the cinema, but for me, it's always going to be sort of a midnight showing or as early in the morning as possible to try and not be in with the riffraff.
Right, and avoid the kids too, because they're the worst.
Oh, so actually, so I agree, but the one time I went to see Cars 2 at the cinema... I'm a big fan of
kids there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bloody full of kids. Exactly. Ruined it.
But so that's the one time where they genuinely made it loads better. Like hearing people like cheer when certain characters came on was lovely.
That's
but
cute.
You obviously don't want that with Batman.
No, I didn't even think of that as a positive. Actually, I guess I'm just scared of doing that as a middle aged man with no children. I'm scared to just go and watch a kids' film on my own. That feels like, do you know what I mean? Like I'd be arrested for that or something. I just don't know if I'm.
I'm just cautious.
The
funny thing about that is, as well, is I remember that day I had a really bad ulcer. So, like in my mouth, there's just this massive amount of pain. And there was a bar next to the cinema. And I thought, I can't sit through 2 hours with this pain. So then I just went and took 2 shots of vodka. And like swished them around my mouth to numb the pain.
Oh my God, it's like a Victorian painkiller.
Yeah. I went in, you know,
I wasn't sure where you were going with that medical complaint. My worry was that you're saying, well, I went in to watch Cars 2. I had a really bloated stomach, so I had to undo the top of my jeans and just sit in the cinema.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was really hot. So
exactly. So Trolley Problem Inc. is a game about ethical dilemmas, not about whether you should go to the cinema and make yourself more comfortable through your dress, but a series of questions based on genuine philosophical papers, which, Lewis, we're going to ask you three. But before we start, we just want to set a base. We've been asking everybody this same question. We're going to start with the trolley problem.
Okay.
Okay, so... there is a runaway trolley barreling down the railway tracks. On the tracks are 5 people unable to move, and you are next to a lever. If you pull the lever, the trolley will switch to a different set of tracks. However, you notice there is a person on the other track. What do you do?
Are they tied to the other track as well?
No.
Or are they just loitering?
No one's bound here. Everyone's just on the tracks. Yeah.
Oh, really? They're just they just got onto the tracks like a herd of sheep, loose sheep.
Yeah.
Does that make a difference as to whether you choose to save them?
Well, there's a lot more as someone who likes, you know, Sherlock Holmes and murder mysteries, you need the more info you have, the better the decisions you can make. Let's say those 5 guys were dressed as railway workers and they had high-vis jackets on and they were aware that the train was coming. Whereas the other guy was blind. He was a very shuffling old man. He got lost. He didn't know where he was. He was gripping onto the rails for dear life. He wasn't going to let go regardless of what was going to happen. That's a very different trolley problem you've elucidated there. So you can't make snap judgments. Okay?
I mean, what I'm saying. You say you can't make snap judgments,
but it's such an easy decision at first glance. You know, are you saying I have to make a snap judgment because the trolley's barreling?
Well, yeah. The runaway trolley is moving very slowly down the railway tracks.
Okay. Well, this shouldn't be a problem. No, but I think. It does sound like you're asking me if I'm willing to make the choice to be active. And I think, yes, I think in that case, I would definitely jump in, save the dog that's drowning, grab him, bring him back to shore, get him out, have a little cuddle. And are we in the same? Is that what happened here?
Maybe the sequel.
No, definitely I'd pull the lever. I think this is... The idea of people not taking action, you hear it quite a lot in terms of something bad is happening and there's a bystander effect and people are like, oh, you know, I'm not going to do something. I'll wait for someone else to do something. I'm not going to call the police. Someone else surely must have called the police. You know, there's this often this thing where no one calls the police and no one does anything. But that's usually if there's other people and they look more authoritative around, you know, like if there's a tall man, people will think he's going to do something. Whereas he might be, you know, a pussy, Simon. You know, so he might not do nothing. And so you should just consider these things, these psychological things in everyday life and be aware that, yeah. But again, don't jump in sometimes to save. There was a thing in Wales the other day. A guy jumped in to save a dog and he got bit really badly by the dog who didn't want to be saved, turned out. Swam to shore just fine. And then that guy had to be rescued. So, you know, sometimes you can be too reckless with your saving of people. This is a very long answer, but I would pull the lever. I know that was a calibration question, but I feel like I'm complicated. Okay, so I'm back to you.
No, I think everybody's given the same answer, haven't they? Everybody's chosen to pull the lever as opposed to, so they've directly influenced what's happening as opposed to playing no part in it, in inverted commas.
I think that's because of the outcome. Like Lewis said, it's a 5v1 outcome. So hopefully we can change that a bit.
Well, 5v1, unless they're dressed as railway workers, in which case Lewis is just walking on by.
Yeah. Well, you know, my brother works the railway and, you know, they have a dedicated member of their crew whose job it is to look up and down the railway to make sure there's no trains coming when they're working on the wires. So, yeah, so they do go out in these big groups and stand around on rails.
This causes questions. The whole point of the game, Sam.
It's more suspicious if there's just one guy on his own. You know, I'm suspicious of him. He shouldn't be out on his own on a railway. Is he up to no good?
Certainly sounds like it. Okay, good. Thank you, Lewis.
You're welcome.
Okay, so the first of our sort of different questions we give the guests is the avalanche problem. So an avalanche is going to crush a city. You can deflect it, but by deflecting it, you'll have to divert it towards a small town. The only piece of information you have here is that when the city was built, it was made for holidaymakers, so they did know that this was a potential risk.
Right. Right.
There's a lot of information.
So I'm Superman, and I'm thinking, they built that fucking thing right next to that volcano. I mean, avalanche, whatever it is. And so in a sense, it's not my fault, it's their hubris, much like the biblical story of that guy who built his house upon the sand as opposed to the rock, and then when the waves came or whatever, it all, there's a song, there's a whole Sunday school, I don't remember, it was a long time ago, but yeah, I feel like mathematically, if you're Superman, you've got to do something, right? You can't just not. If you've got the power to divert an avalanche, what are you waiting for? Like, what better opportunity is there to show off your power and accidentally squash an entire small town by accident?
So you want to move the avalanche just to show off you can move an avalanche?
I think that if I had that power in my hands, I'd be I'd be villainized if I didn't use it, right? They'd say Superman, Super Lewis stood by and watched as this beautiful ski resort was crushed under, sure they built it there in a danger zone, but, you know, that's why he's around. Fair enough, he squashed this small village nearby. But
you're not worried on pages 2 and 3 of the newspaper would be about how you destroyed a small town.
No, because I think page 1 is where that's what people remember, okay, that he saved the big town.
Imagine, what if your superpower was eye rolling, though? You could have done a really big eye roll at the start of the avalanche going, I told them. I told them not to build it there.
Right.
Well, I think it's actually a reference to San Francisco. So the original problem, obviously, San Francisco is built on the San Andreas Fault. Not that you could save San Francisco from the San Andreas Fault and make it move
not
to
anymore.
A little town.
They're stuffed. Yeah. It was a time, but no.
Even Super
anymore.
Lewis can't help them.
Oh, they're too far gone.
Okay, so you would divert the avalanche of, obviously, it was God's will to destroy the city, but Super Lewis has come and moved it over to the next town.
Yeah, evil God, though. Super villain God. Bad guy. I'm the good guy in this story. Just look, there's always collateral damage. Every time you see one of these movies, no one's talking about how this guy's office block got blown up, or his shop was destroyed, or his car got... Oh, my Ferrari was squashed by the Incredible Hulk. Who cares? Do you know what I mean? He saved the world. Shut the fuck up and claim it on insurance.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so let's move on to the next problem then. So this is, talking about the Avengers, this is the New York problem.
Oh.
A atom bomb is headed to New York.
Fuck.
Yes.
This is bad news. I didn't hear about this. Crikey.
The only way in which the bomb can be prevented from reaching New York is by deflecting it. But the only deflection path available will take the bomb onto Worcester. Worcester's population is 600,000.
Worcester?
Yeah. So Worcester, this is a problem. Which
is that
is
a real
actually,
place?
Yeah, it's linked to the trolley problem original article. And it's obviously upping the stakes, but it's also showing intention. Obviously,
in
this
States.
Is a nuclear bomb.
Is it in the States?
It's
in Worcester. States? Where is it? What happened?
It's in New York State.
New York States. So it's upping the states. It goes up too far.
It's upping the stakes.
Okay. I've just need the clarification on the question. Sorry.
No stakes. So,
there are high stakes. Very, very high stakes, though. Well, again, I don't see how this is a different problem to the last one, really. It's almost like a... It's like millions of people get killed in a nuclear fireball, or I divert it to this place that no one's heard of, and probably no one will give a shit.
The 600,000 people and their families.
I've forgotten what it was called already. and so I think... look, if I'm a superhero, I do want to minimize my... ideally, no one will die. But... unless there's an active reason why I think the population of New York has to die, right? Maybe they're just causing a lot of bad TV shows being made there, or like there's a couple of really annoying comedians from there who need to be cancelled. You know, maybe there's like some other reasons that I haven't taken into account here. But I think when you don't have enough info, unless you can like convince me there's a reason why New York needs to be deleted, maybe it was sinking anyway. Maybe they only had a year until they were sank. Maybe there's like 50 other nukes going and they're all going to hit New York anyway. So, you know, maybe I'm just nuking Worcester for no reason or Worcester.
But it's like you said, right at the top of the episode about how, you know, it's about being active. You're actively killing 600,000 people. So I understand you want to be able
to
help.
No. I'm actively killing minus 10 million, 800,000 people, whatever, right? Because, you know, the balance sheet is, you know, either I don't know, as a superhero, I feel like I am, though, right? I'm like going up there catching this atom bomb. I guess maybe these people in positions of power should consider themselves, you know, this more, you know, like the president should consider himself as a superhero because he has the power to do, you know, great good or great evil. And I don't know, I consider it to be, you know, I think you, if you were given a choice and it, in a vacuum, certainly if there's no other option, if there's no other people, if I'm presented with this problem, I'm definitely going to be, I'm going to choose the lesser evil, right? I'm going to choose the poor city of Worcester.
Sam, is that a question to do with, because you aren't told how many people live in New York, but you are told about how many live in Worcester. Is the implication there that it will be all of Worcester and some of New York? Or
No, it will be all of New York.
Oh, okay.
I want to say it's around 8 million people live in New York. So it'd be 8 million versus 600,000. I think one of the most interesting things about this is that I'd never said anything about being a superhero. Lewis has fully brought this character to life. I have such power, though.
I mean, can I shoot lasers out of my eyes? I need to know more about what I'm able to do because, you know, that will affect the future of the planet. Especially if Worcester's been hit by an atom bomb. What does that mean? Like, you know, there's some serious demographic and political socioeconomic shifts that are going to take place in the world after this event.
You're not powerful enough to put it into the sea, but you are powerful enough to get it to Worcester, apparently.
Oh, I see. So I'm very... So maybe I've got some weird superpower then. Like, you know, like kind of one of those shit guys, like Silver Surfer or something, you know? I can, like, catch it on my skateboard for a while and then, like, knock it to one side. But I can't, like, just get rid of it and throw it into the sun like Superman would.
In this question, Lewis,
that's
I'm
good.
Afraid.
That helps me, you know, set the scene for where I am.
Well, I feel like with the last question, from what you've said so far... I know where we're going with this, but hopefully we can up the ante enough.
Again, I'm trying to find outs, right? I'm trying to find ways around me justifying the crime I consider it to be of allowing evil events to occur and neglecting my responsibility. To the planet, to the people of planet Earth, who I love and share my experience with.
We are lucky to have you, Lewis.
Thank you, Simon. it's great. I'm proud to serve.
Okay, so this final question is the Worcester problem. So the nuke is still heading towards New York, but you've just found out that you can no longer divert it. So it is still heading for New York, but what you can do is actively destroy Worcester, and that will send a wave, then making the original atom bomb move off course and go into the ocean. So it's a similar problem in the way that you're destroying Worcester to save New York, but you are actively going to Worcester and destroying it to then send out this shockwave.
Right. I see. And this is a little bit like the idea of... not really like it, but the idea of Donald Trump or someone, in order to fire the nuclear codes, they have to kill their aide who has the codes inside him. So you have to, you're actively taking part in, you're actively killing people rather than them being a consequence of saving. But yeah, I think the distinction is profound. But I think that when you take it to its logical conclusion, this really reeks of the greater good, doesn't it? You know, the idea of this doing terrible things for a better purpose. And I think often we don't get it so mathematical, right? The idea of people doing these greater good things, it's not clear that this many people will be saved by this action. And in this case, I feel like it's a fairly easy decision, but I think that in reality, we're confronted by this in a much more nebulous form, right? Especially with politics and with decisions, with law and with human interaction in general. You know, we don't always, we're not necessarily willing to make decisions that we feel are for the greater good. Because out of history, the greater good has often led to famines that have killed millions of people or you know, disastrous, unexpected consequences. I think in this case, it's actually an easy choice, really, even though I am actively killing the poor men, women and children of Worcester who are going to have to give their lives in some horrible thing where I pick up their whole city and lob it at the incoming atom bomb. And people are... I feel like, you know, in The Boys, have you seen The Boys where they've got that evil Superman kind of thing?
Right.
And yeah, he does, like, evil stuff. But he's kind of, you know, I think sometimes he's forced into these situations, you know, because in reality with superheroes battling, there's going to be, you know, what's it, collateral damage or like what they call it, like casualties from just them fighting. And that's something which I think is a really interesting moral thing to look at. And you don't see it really when you see Superman. He's just somehow no one dies and he never has to deal with those moral consequences and that inevitable crushing misery and depression that he must really think about all the time. Every time he saves someone, he's like, well, fuck it, how many people couldn't I save, how many people had to die or be sacrificed to get to this outcome, which was better than the zero sum, better than than it would have been if I hadn't acted. But yeah, I do feel like I think I'd need some therapy, but we're gonna get over it and know that we made the right decision, because you know all those people in New York, God, they'll be grateful, you know.
And I think you've hit the nail right on the head there. It's a very utilitarian look, like it's very much what is the best outcome here. And if these were real, you wouldn't be able to say, oh, this is A and this is B. So then the whole thing becomes a bit more up in the air of what you'd actually do. But in these problems, because we know A and B, you're actively going with the one which is best for the most people.
Is there a right answer?
No.
That's just degrees. And we'll be able to find out whether everybody agreed with you or not, Lewis, when they play for themselves and compare their decisions to everybody else's.
Great segue.
Thanks very much. That's why I'm here.
Learn from the best.
Listen, thank you very much for joining us for some light relief there.
It went a bit. I waffled a lot. I can't help
not at all. No, it was fascinating. You know, hopefully, is an illustration of the sort of discussions that we're trying to provoke through the game itself. It's been good to run through them with you. I've still got loads more questions, but we don't have time for them, sadly. Thanks so much for joining us, Lewis.
I'm excited. I'll do another one. Let me know. I can keep going, Sam.
Exactly. We've run out of questions. Brilliant. Yes, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Sam. You've been listening to the Trolley Problem Inc. podcast. The game's available now. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back for another show soon.
Bye.